Luce's new stranger children were small and beautiful and violent. She learned early that it wasn't smart to leave them unattended in the yard with the chickens. Later, she'd find feathers, a scaled yellow foot with its toes clenched. Neither child displayed language at all, but the girl glared murderous expressions at her if she dared ask where the rest of the rooster went. The children loved fire above all elements of creation. A heap of dry combustibles delighted them beyond reason. Luce began hiding the kitchen matches, except the few she kept in the hip pocket of her jeans for lighting the stove. Within 2 days, the children learned how to make their own fire from tinder and a green stick bowed with a shoelace. Tiny cavemen on Benzedrine couldn't have made fire faster. Then they set the back corner of the lodge alight, and Luce had to run back and forth from the spring with sloshing tin buckets to put it out. She switched them, both equally, with a thin willow twig until their legs were striped pink, and it became clear that they would draw whatever pain came to them down deep inside and refuse to cry, at which point Luce swore to herself she would never strike them again. She went to the kitchen and began making a guilty peach pie. Luce was not much maternal. The state put the children on her. If she had not agreed to take them, they would have been separated and adopted out like puppies. By the time they were grown, they wouldn't even remember each other. Though now that it was probably too late to go back, maybe that would have been a good thing. Separate them and dilute whatever weirdness they shared and ignited between them. Yet more proof, as if you needed it, that the world would be a better place if every damn body didn't feel some deep need to reproduce. But God in his infinite wisdom had apparently thought it was an entertaining idea for us to always be wanting to get up in one another. Also, the children were here, and what was Luce to do? You try your best to love the world despite obvious flaws in design and execution, and you take care of whatever needy things present themselves to you during your passage through it. Otherwise, you're worthless. Same way with the lodge. Luce didn't own it. She was the caretaker, sort of. Some would call her a squatter now that the old man was dead. But nobody else seemed interested in keeping it from growing over with kudzu until it became nothing but a green mound. Back at the edge of the previous century, the lodge had been a cool summer retreat for rich people escaping the lowland steam of August. Some railroad millionaire passing through the Highland Valley in his own rail car had a vision, or possibly a whim, to build an earthen dam, back the river up, fill the upper end of the valley with water right to the edge of the village. Then, on the far side, build a log lodge of his own design, something along the lines of the Old Faithful Inn, though smaller and more exclusive. He must have been a better railroad executive than architect, because what he built was a raw, outsized rectangle, a huge log cabin with a covered porch looking down a sweep of lawn to the lake and across the water to the town. Evidently, rich people were satisfied by simpler things in the yesteryears. Now, the millionaires and the railroad were gone, but the lake remained. A weird, color-shifting horizontal plain set in an otherwise convoluted vertical landscape of blue and green mountains. The lodge persisted as well. A strange, decaying place to live in alone, though. The main floor was taken up by the common rooms, a voluminous lobby with its massive stone fireplace and handsome, back-breaking craftsman armchairs and settles, quarter-sawn oak tables and cabinets. A long dining room with triple-hung lake-view windows and, behind swinging doors, a big kitchen with a small table where the help once crowded together to eat leftovers. Second floor? Just narrow hallways and sleeping chambers behind numbered 6-panel doors with transom windows. Third floor, way up under the eaves, a dark, smothering rabbit warren of windowless servants' quarters. When she lived alone, Luce didn't go to the upper floors often, but not out of fear. Not really. It was little but bedsteads and cobwebs up there, and she didn't want to believe in ghosts or anything similar. Not even the portents of bad dreams. Yet the fading spirit world touched her imagination pretty strong when she was awake at 3 a.m. alone in the big place. The dark sleeping floors, with their musty transient pens and cribs for the guests and their help, spooked her. The place spoke of time, how you're here, and then you're gone, and all you leave for a little while afterward are a few artifacts that outlive you. Case in point, old Stubblefield, who had owned the lodge for the past few decades. Luce visited him several times during his dying days, and she was there at the end to watch the light go out of his eyes. In the final hours, Stubblefield mostly catalogued his possessions and listed who should get what. His concerns were largely real estate, all his holdings to go to his sole, useless grandson. Also, a few valuable objects, such as his dead wife's silver service and lace tablecloth, perfect but for a slight rust stain at one corner, barely noticeable. The silver candle holders were a heavy weight on Stubblefield's mind, because his wife had loved them so much. Oddly, he left them to Luce, who didn't love them at all, and probably never would. Easy to be disdainful and ironic toward others' false values. Still, Luce hoped that when she was at the same thin margin of life, she would be concerned with looking out the window to note the weather, or the shape of the moon, or some lone bird flying by. Certainly not a bunch of worn-out teaspoons. But Luce was half a century younger than old Stubblefield and didn't know how she'd think and what she would value if she made it that far down the road. All her life, the main lesson Luce had learned was that you couldn't count on anybody. So she guessed you could work hard to make yourself who you wanted to be and yet find that the passing years had transformed you beyond your own recognition. End up disappointed in yourself, despite your best efforts. And that's the downward way Luce's thoughts fell whenever she went upstairs into the dreary past.